You are listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 3800 Marlton Pike. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday at 10:30 a.m. or 7 p.m.
Okay, Lent's almost over. We're in like our sixth week and we've been with Jesus, marching towards Jerusalem. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you, have you yet had this experience in life? Where you've had to like reconsider something that you thought for a long time was like basically true. Something you hadn't questioned for maybe years and years, ever since whenever you learned it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I don't know. Is that true or not? I'm thinking of this other thing, but I don't want to bring it up because you guys are going to groan hard. Now it's on the internet. Have you run into these flat earth people yet on the internet? Yeah, you have, right? Oh, what's with these flat earth people? What is with this? All right, let's talk about it. You know, okay, so if you haven't been paying attention. All right. Everybody in here is pretty young, younger than me. Oh my gosh, am I the oldest one here? Hey, you guys all got to respect me. This is awesome. All right. I was going to say, Sherry and Joyce aren't here, so maybe I don't have to explain it, but I'm going to say that, so there's these people on the internet, and you can, if you don't watch yourself, you can get into an argument with somebody on the internet about whether the earth is flat or not, and yet it's the current year right now. It is really whatever year it is, and there are people who say, they're going to assert on the internet that the earth's flat. Now, I've been paying attention to this, and I'm getting more and more internet savvy, despite my age, and I think, you guys tell me if I'm right, I think, the minority of these flat earth people like sincerely believe that the earth is flat. I think the majority of the flat earth people like the game. They like the razzing. We used to call it razzing. I think you call it trolling now. Yeah, they like to get under your skin. They like to get in your head. And they can really get in your head. Do you disagree with me? No, they will. Like, you know how the game goes? Like, well, prove it to me, man. Prove to me that the earth is round. That's just something you heard in school. You don't know that. People just told you that. You don't know that that's all fake. And then there's this thing like, oh my gosh, maybe I'm wrong. Like, how do I know? Like, did you fly around the earth three times like Superman in that movie? So you can like assert that it's a ball because you saw it with your eyes and you know from spatial whatever knowledge from direct observation that the earth is round because it looks flat to me. Like I can walk across it and it looks, except for the mountains, it's like pretty, straight ahead. I'm not like walking over a ball constantly or whatever. Like if you start talking to people like this, it gets so far away from what you can actually perceive and appreciate in your mind that pretty soon you realize, I don't kind of know what I'm talking about because it's on such a scale, right? That you guys are looking at me like, okay, yeah, you agree, right? Okay. All right, but I think it's a funny thing. I bring them up not because I want to tell you that maybe the Earth is round and maybe everything you're thinking is wrong. I'm not saying that, but it's a horrible feeling. I think it's a really horrible feeling, and I think that's why it's kind of funny when people do it online because it gives them like this weird power through words to really, really mess with people. And it's amazing how vulnerable we are, right? Amazing how quickly you can almost lose your mind online because of typed words. It's crazy. How do you know what you know? You start thinking about it, you're like, oh my gosh, maybe. Like how do I know what I know at all? How do you know it's true? Huh? So it's kind of a problem. And in fact, the things we want to know most, I think, in life, the things we're like desperate to know and would make us feel like probably the most secure if we knew them, are the things that are like utterly unknowable to anybody, right? Like, what's gonna happen to me? Am I gonna be okay? Does anybody really love me? I mean, like really, for real, real love me? Like if they knew me, would they keep loving me for real? All these things, right? Okay, they say that knowledge is power. They say that. I don't know if I agree. But see if you can follow me for a second. I think we know what we know mostly because we trust the people that told us that. I don't know if we really know anything apart from that. I've been thinking about it just a little bit before I got here tonight because I wanted to make this speech. I think I'm ready to say that to you. That I don't know if I know anything outside of that I got the knowledge from a trust, something I trust, right? A trustable source. Like when I was little, I really, really, really trusted my parents, which is funny if you know my parents, right? But I really trusted them because I had nothing else. You know, I had nothing else. And when I was in, so it was like ninth grade, right? They started doing algebra, and that didn't make any sense. None at all. It seems like a very complicated puzzle to me still. But people have told me so much about algebra that I actually believe it's real now. I actually believe in algebra because I see all the great project of the public school system, right? Because they like, do you know how expensive public school is? Paperwork. You know, once you get a house, you know how expensive public school is. And they spend a lot of money on getting this thing called algebra into kids' heads, or like a little tiny bit of algebra that actually does get into their heads. Like, they spend a lot of money on this. It's a huge project. And I like those people. You know, I remember my ninth grade algebra teacher. He used to collect raisin boxes. He was an interesting guy. But there was something really sincere about him. Like I believe that he thought it was important that I learn this, and so I learned some of it. I learned enough to pass the course, and it's funny. But I don't know if you know anything aside from that you trust the people that told you, and that they kind of proved themselves trustable. What I'm trying to say is I don't think knowledge is, I don't think the way we think about knowing is really like helpful or good or probably even accurate. I mean, I think most of the things we know because it's knowledge that's become like so connected to us that we could like use it, and you can use your knowledge like a tool, like when you're using a hammer or a probe or a pen, like that tool kind of becomes part of you. So that thing that you're knowing becomes, like, you stop paying attention to the thing, you're knowing what you're knowing through what you know. Horrible. Excuse me. All right, but we're still stuck in this place, right? You're in Lent, following Jesus. To what? Do we know where Jesus is going? Do we know it's going to be okay? Is Jesus worth trusting? I don't know. I mean, a lot of the things we want to know most about Jesus are so unknowable. Really, how does any of this work? It's tough. We kind of have to kind of give up on a certain kind of knowledge. We kind of have to accept like not knowing as a reality that's not gonna change. Growing, I grew up with all the Bible stories. I don't know if you did. I love them, love them, love them, love them. And Palm Sunday though, always like it's kind of like weird to me, pretty confusing because I don't know. We always celebrated it as like the kids marching in, waving the palms, everybody's like, yeah, like, Super Bowl, champions! Yeah, like the triumphal entry, triumph. And then like a week later, like, you know, the same crowds in the streets, it's like the same crowds in the street scene, but they're like, crucify him. So I was like, well, why are we so happy about Palm Sunday? And I don't get it. I still don't get it. I don't know. I mean, I think that's what it was like being on the road, on the street back then. Jesus is walking in, and you just don't know. I mean, let's look at it. Jesus is traveling with some group of people, 12 disciples and clingers-ons. It's probably a pretty big entourage. We can't, I don't know, I'm not going to take a guess as to actual numbers. But they're traveling together, so those people really knew Jesus. But that's not apparently like all the people gathering in the street in Jerusalem. Maybe they had a few, like, forward contacts in the city, relations, cousins, whatever. Maybe some people had gotten word of Jesus, but I think most people in Jerusalem are probably doing something like when you were in high school, and they're like, fight, 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 and you turn, kids in my school, turn and run towards the action because you want to see what's going to happen. You want to see if the powerful are going to fall. You want to see if the underdog is going to step up. You want to see if righteousness is going to happen, or if there's going to be justice, or if it's going to be a travesty. I mean, you want to see. You want to see because you're hoping for all those things, I think. You're hoping for something that, I mean, why do people run out into the street? I think that's what's going on. And I don't think they really knew. I mean, they were, probably had hard lives. I mean, it's hard for us, maybe, hard for us to relate to being under a foreign political power, like they were, being under empire, but you could probably imagine that, right? Somebody new's in town. Jesus? Let's go see. Maybe this is going to change things. That's funny, because Jesus himself doesn't come in and say, and doesn't like explain it. You know, Jesus doesn't come in with like an explanation or like a, what they call a press packet. You know, what you get like with the photos and stuff, like the group photos and bullet points. It doesn't come in with that. It comes in like with old symbols, kind of a kind of like whatever kind of entrance. Like, yeah, throw down whatever you have. I don't know, Jesus is here. Cut down the branches, throw them in the street. Yeah, Jesus isn't saying, okay, this is what's happening. Jesus seems a lot more interested in what you think is happening. That's what he's usually asking people. I mean, I've been reading through this one guy's story, John. John apparently was like, Jesus is like just closest little buddy. Couldn't shake him off. He was real tight, really super tight with Jesus. He's one of the younger disciples. And when John wrote down, you know, his story, what he remembered of Jesus, he wrote down a lot of stories about Jesus saying to people, who do you think I am? Let's look at a couple of them tonight, because I think that's where we are. I mean, I don't know everything about Jesus. I'm trying to know. There's a few different ways you could take it, you know? And depending on how you're thinking of Jesus, it's going to determine, like, how you do this table thing that we've been talking about, table communion. So let's talk about that. Let's look at some things that John wrote down. This one guy, Jesus restored his sight. I misspoke. He didn't restore his sight. This is the man born blind. And this is like really fascinating. John writes about this. So there's this guy who's born blind. He's never seen in his life. Jesus comes along and restores his sight or grants him the ability to see miraculously. And this guy's like ecstatic. And everybody around him has a problem with it. He's explaining it to everybody around him. Listen to what he says. He goes, the man they call Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. Then he told me to go and wash it, and I went and washed, and then I could see. Where is this man? They asked him. I don't know. They keep asking. He keeps explaining. He put mud on my eyes, now I can see. And they said to him, look, this man is not from God because he doesn't keep the rules. And anyway, nobody's allowed to perform miracles. What, do you think he's God? Like, nobody gets to be God. People don't get to be God. What are you talking about? That's not allowed. That's really, really, really not allowed. So then he says, oh, this goes on. You should really go read it. I don't have time to read the whole thing to you tonight. It's pretty fascinating. John 9, check it out. He goes, I read a lot of Bible. I'm sorry if I have to find a place. It's all going to be good. He goes, I don't know whether he's a sinner or not. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I can see. And they asked him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He said, I told you already and you didn't listen. What do you want me to tell you again? Now I can see. Are you trying to become his disciple too? The man said, this is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from. And he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen. That's the wrong word. So they're saying, if this man, he says, if this man wasn't from God, how can I see? You might be like that. Your life may have changed. Don't overlook it. You know, if Jesus has made a big difference in your life, don't overlook that. If something's changed your life a lot, don't miss it. Don't make a little bit of it. They got so mad at this guy who could see, and his non-explanation, that they threw him out. They threw him out of town, and Jesus went and found him. And Jesus said to him, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir? The man asked Jesus, tell me so that I can believe in him. Jesus says, you have now seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking with you. Formerly blind man said, Lord, I believe, and he worshiped. That happened. Another way you could think about Jesus, I guess, and there's another conversation between Jesus and here's a guy at work. guys got to make decisions all day. Local ruler, Pontius Pilate, working for the Romans. John 18, this is after Jesus was arrested, and oh man, everybody's giving him a hard time. He's been beat by this time and mobbed and all kinds of things. Stayed up all night. This is the next morning. Pilate went back inside the palace after talking with the Jewish rulers. He called Jesus and he asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus asked him, "Is that your idea? Or did others talk to you about me?" Pilate replied, "I'm not Jewish. Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it that you have done?" Jesus says, "Well, my kingdom's not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." "So you're a king then?" says Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." Pilate replied, "What is truth?" You'd be feeling like that too. I mean, we don't know. Pilate doesn't know. He's not making up his mind either. But I think it's interesting. Jesus isn't declaring, "You must believe." Jesus is asking, "Do you believe? Who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am?" You honestly might not be ready to come to this table, heard, but you might be. Here's another one. Try this one. Mary, who had been following Jesus around for some time, on the way to Jerusalem. Check this chick out. This woman. She knows something's going on. Jesus just raised her brother from the dead. That's a whole story unto itself. You can go read that. She's so happy. She's doing that thing like what Kendra was talking about, like knowing worthiness, like knowing better than knowing, you know, believing, a kind of knowing that's beyond knowing. Her whole like 401k, like the whole thing, everything that she'd been saving up, like for her whole life, she withdraws it all out, one go. And my metaphor is falling apart here. But she just blows it all on Jesus, like in his last moments. Okay? Because culturally it's different, so I'm not going to tell you about this jar of perfume, because it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't speak to me. But apparently it's like a huge savings account. Like everything you had saved up for your whole life. She breaks this jar of perfume over. She breaks the seal. It's done. All the savings are gone. And she puts it on Jesus' feet. Everybody's flipping out. Like, what are you doing? Do you even know what you're doing? This is such a bad decision. Jesus says, "Leave her alone. This is what she's doing to prepare me for her burial." She knows what's going on here. She knows about worthiness. It's knowing. Now, in these last days, Jesus is talking a lot to the disciples. He's coming to the end. He's trying to leave with them what he needs to leave with them to finish the job, to set them up. Because he's not going to be there with them. He keeps reminding them of this. And they start to get nervous. John's writing about the time during the meal and in the garden, right after the meal. And John writes like more than any of the other writers about this time at great length. Like he writes pages and pages and pages and pages of things that Jesus said during that time. So interesting. One of the things that was going on was Jesus is saying to his disciples, "Look, I'm going away. And where I'm going, you're not going to be able to come with me. Not right now." And you can understand that they're pretty upset about this, because imagine if you, imagine if you quit your job, quit school, quit your family, and followed somebody really cool to the city, and things are going well, and things are changing, and it's great, and then your mentor guy is like, "Okay, we're about done, and I'm leaving you, okay? 1 mile from home, what are you doing? All right, give me a second, okay?" Jesus is saying, "Where I'm going, you can't follow." And the disciples are like, Peter says to him, "Lord, why can't I follow you? I will lay down my life for you." Remember that? Jesus says this, "Listen, don't let your hearts be troubled.
Don't let your hearts be troubled.
You believe in God, believe also in me. I have told you that my Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, so that you may also be where I am. You know the place where I'm going. And Thomas says to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going, so how can we know the way? And Jesus says, this is where he says this famous thing, I am the way, the truth, and the life. That's where he says that. And he says, if you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you know him and you've seen him. And these guys aren't getting it. Philip says, Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us. Like, you know, you hear the certainty that they want? They want to know. They want to know for sure it's going to be okay after Jesus leaves. They want to know. They want to know. They want to have the knowledge and be sure of it so they can feel confident. You know, like you want to know. You want to know that the thing you're thinking is okay, it's good, and that's how it's going to turn out. And here's Jesus' response again. I would just want to read this whole five chapters to you, but Jesus answered, don't you know me, Philip, even after I've been here all this time with you? Such a long time. Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? You don't believe that I am in the Father and that the Father is in me? The words I say to you, I don't speak on my own authority. Rather, it's the Father living in me who is doing his work. So, knowing and not knowing. There's something better than not knowing. Believing? It's a place to work it out. I think Jesus is asking you, who do you say that I am? Jesus isn't making a demand. So how do we figure that out? It takes time, I think. It takes coming back to the story over and over.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.